Rumor has it that Promised Land, a mysterious traveling carnival, has just arrived in Bethlehem, setting up in the Rose Garden and inviting attendees to escape into its whimsy and magic, proclaiming that it has the ability to take you inside of America's dreams. The magicians behind this carnival adventure are, in fact, Touchstone Theater, the region's only ensemble-based theater, and they're presenting the debut of America Dreams, an interactive, original, and site-specific show co-written by Touchstone Ensemble members and directed by J.P. Jordan. Presented Saturday, April 18th, and Sunday, April 19th at 2 p.m. at the Bethlehem Rose Garden as part of Touchstone's community-centric programming series Unbound Year Round and in partnership with LV250. America Dreams invites audiences to journey together through a series of immersive, interactive carnival attractions, each exploring a different facet of American life and identity. This is WDIY 88.1 Public Radio, and you are tuned in to Lehigh Valley Arts Salon. I remain Kate Scuffle, your host, and this evening, my guest is Touchstone Theater Executive Director, Ensemble Member, J.P. Jordan. Welcome, J.P.
Welcome. Thanks for having me. I love hearing you, your intro, and you describe the thing, because it's like, yeah, that's what we're doing. That sounds right.
Well, good. Well, it's fascinating. I mean, in a sense, when we talk about something site-specific, that can sound very technical, but literally, you're creating a carnival in the Rose, like the carnival has come to town.
Yeah. Indeed. Yeah. I guess, theoretically, it would be more site responsive than, site specific, but
all right.
Yes, it all fits.
Well, and how, little backstory, how did this come about? I know it was a 2-year planning process, and we've mentioned 250 Lehigh Valley, I guess, and the Unbound Year Round programming. How did we end up with a carnival?
Sure. Well, I think there's a couple questions there. And the one is, how did this come to be, right?
So,
if you look at Touchstone's lineage from 1999, when we started with the Steelbound event, it's basically every 3 to 4 years we're able to do a large-scale community-based initiative. Uh-huh. And so we wanted to get away from that. You know, that lineage goes from Steelbound to Quixote to Another River Flows, Resting Place, Journey from the East. And then in 2019, we started with the Festival Unbound initiative. And this was like, we were like, cool, like, what about those areas, those 3 to 4 years in between or whatever? Like, how are we keeping a pulse on things in the community? And then so that's when we started Festival Unbound as a yearly initiative. Okay. And so that kicked off in that first year. And one of the centerpieces of that was Prometheus Redux, which was essentially Steelbound 2.0. We started looking out into the future after we were continuing with the Festival Unbound initiative for a while and saying, cool, what's coming up and how can we look at it? And oftentimes it's what's like, let's look at the calendar. The Festival Unbound, named after Steelbound, was what's coming up on the calendar. It was like, oh, do you guys know it's 20 years since we did Steelbound?
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
Sure enough, you look at the calendar and like you just realize, you're living in our world and you're like, hey, this America 250 thing is coming up. It seems like we should say something about it. And so we, about 2 years ago, got in our studio together and said, what do we want to be saying about America 250? And at that time, the ensemble had just lost a couple people, and there were new people coming into the ensemble. And so we understood that there was this kind of need for us to build something together. So this is really everybody that is an ensemble member at Touchstone has had their claws in this thing for the last 2 years and has been forming this, because there's something about ensemble-based practice where you're asking, like, what is it about us that allows us to get in a room together and communicate with each other when it's so hard to do that in real life? And you might say, like, well, it's because you're all, liberal progressives. And it's like, that is not the case. Like, those people are in the room, but there's also anarchist socialists or anarchist libertarians in the room and too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just like, when you put those folks together, it's like you find some kind of commonality. You know what I mean? It's just because you go in there with an open heart and you approach things in this way. I remember back in, I think it was 2008, and Dennis Kucinich was running for for president that year, and there was this interview with him, and somebody asked me, it's like, if you could choose anybody on the ticket, if should you get the nod, who would you choose as your running mate? And they were going through, people are like, nah, he's like, if I would choose anybody, I would choose Ron Paul of the Republican Party. And it's just like, so you have this person that's essentially, some would call a socialist, choosing the most libertarian person on the planet. You know what I mean? And saying, like, I have more in common with that person's policies and views on civil liberties than I do with the people in my party. You know what I mean? So it's interesting. Like, we've drawn this dynamic of right and left out in our country, and it's become so skewed and non-representational of anything that has to do with anything at this point, where it's just following dogmas.
Yeah.
That we looked at it and we were like, fundamentally, we're in an identity crisis when, like, even the people who are saying they're on a side or believe one thing are cross-talking each other, and it's all kind of something in the middle, and none of it is really meaningful to any kind of dialogue that's happening. Not none of it is meaningful. Like, people are making meaningful gestures, but it's like the talking heads and the people in power, it's just like, what is going on? And so we thought about this. It was just like, we are amidst an identity crisis. And I've heard other people say that as well. And so we started to think, like, how do we address, like, dialogue, right? And because when we first start coming up with ideas, some of them are very, I want to scream about this thing. And how do I, you know, and it's just like, and so we stopped for a moment and we're just like, we need to understand the bias of our own group and what that is, because we are definitely thick with bias, you know what I mean? But we say, we have to understand what our bias is, and we have to address that, and we have to confront that as we address things and stuff. And so it leads us through this exploration of, like, initially just trying to, like, understand how to talk with each other in the context of dealing with politics at that point in time. And we're talking, like, pre-Trump getting elected into the second term, you know what I mean, when we're beginning this process.
Yeah.
And so anything that might be resonating, like, with the current zeitgeist politically, it's like we were just dealing with the circumstances we had 2 years ago when we were talking about this. And so you get that stew going on in the room, and they're just like, cool, well, what can we do about this? And we start through a process where everybody's allowed to bring in their ideas, and then eventually we come to this idea. It was like, what if we hold a carnival, and then the exhibits at the carnival are addressing something about the country? Huh. And so you get to that point, and then you say, what are those things we want to address?
Right.
And then you get to this next point, for us at least, where it's just like, we want to address these issues. And then you stop for a second, is like, aren't these issues actually part of the problem? Is that we are a country that addresses issues, and not, like, we're treating symptoms constantly and not the cause of the problem. And the cause of the problem is that dialogue isn't happening, and we don't even understand, like, a shared sense of self amongst ourselves. We are babies. We're 250 years old. Look at how long, like, some of the other countries in the world are.
Right.
And it's just like, we're having this, I don't know, it's like we're just in our teens or something. You know?
It's interesting, even the language. I was thinking American, because I keep wanting to say American dreams, but it's America dreams, plural dreams, versus this idea of the American dream, which is who defines that and what is that.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that even the title implies that there's a conversation about there's many dreams, or whose dreams, and are we talking about them with each other, and do they change?
Yeah, all of that is the case. You know, we had part of the name was inspired by, we did a piece 13, 14 years ago called Ulysses Dreams.
Okay.
You know, non-possessive. And it was this, and this was idea, and we really liked that idea of the many meanings of the word dreams.
Yeah.
We also had this, another kind of hinge word for us is that when people come to the carnival is called Promised Land. And so, you know, what does it mean to be promised land? What is the promise of the American dream? And the audience is confronted as they come into the showcase by what we're calling the dreamettes. And they'll be collecting people's dreams. And every audience member will have a chance to write down and put in this dream box, realized or unrealized, what do you think is the greatest promise of the American dream?
Oof. Wow. And that's how they start the evening.
That's how we start you. Well, it's 2 p.m. You got to – that's the question you
afternoon,
need.
Afternoon, that's right. Sorry, 2 p.m. Right. Huh. And so it's a carnival. There's a carnival, you know, encompassing this. This is what we're working in. And then the experiences or the attractions that we as an audience member encounter and interact with are very period-driven, different epochs or moments kind of in American history? Or
those exhibits, I wouldn't say they're period-driven. What they're driven by is what we considered, and this might be a slightly wrong word for it, but like problematic ideologies. They're coming to terms with things of our American idea. Okay. And one of those was, how do we collectively hold our past? You know what I mean? And we all know the progressive doctrine is that the Constitution is a dynamic document, and the conservative view is like, no, it's a static document and we have to come to it, you know? And so another one is, how do we see our collective future together? And again, there's so many versions of a collective future that we're not owning anything as a group. So we like, it's just like, can we talk about this and understand, like, when we talk about that, there are lots of good ideas out there. They may not even be your ideas, but with every idea you have, like, there's going to be another side to it saying, like, we see, well, that's a great idea, but here's the problem with that idea. Another thing we wanted to address was the commodification and commercialization of American identity. Mm. Another one, of course, we have to address this, is tribalism and collectivism within our country. And then finally, this idea of what are the lies we tell ourselves and when are they good and when are they not so good? You know, when are they actually harmful and kind of deluding us into a false sense of identity? You know, and so, like, you have Audie Murphy, you have Paul Bunyan, or, you know, Pecos Bill, and it was just like, we needed those things at that time to get through whatever we were going through, you know, and that's good. It's good to have legends to look up to and be like, that's a good way to act. That's what I need to rise to right now. But when you keep those identities around potentially too long or own them in an unhealthy way, what happens is you start to take on this an identity that is not real and is not in tune with, like, just the reality of the world.
Or what's around you in America.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to be taking a break in a moment. When we do come back, I'd love to talk a little bit about how this is manifest in terms of, you know, creating the production, imagining the audience interaction to kind of arrive at this conversation. Because inherently it also feels, it's interesting to me, it just feels so richly theatrical. What a wonderful way to have these conversations that's more alive and enticing and more intimate and kind of comfortable, maybe, or not. I don't know.
I think that the ethos of Touchstone is always a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
Yeah.
Like, we are not looking to be confrontational. This is written in a very, I wouldn't say bipartisan way, but in a way where we're like, let's just all come to the table and let's just experience something together. If we can experience something together, it's like music. If we can sing together, then guess what? Like, we're good.
We can move forward.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Lehigh Valley Arts Salon here on WDIY 88.1. I'm your host, Kate Scuffle, and tonight we're talking about America Dreams, Touchstone Theater's new interactive, site-responsive, fantastical carnival of a show running Saturday, April 18th, and Sunday, April 19th at 2 p.m. at the Bethlehem Rose Garden. My guest is Touchstone's executive director and ensemble member J.P. Jordan, who is also directing America Dreams, and we'll both be right back after this short break.
Are you saying out with the old, in with the new when it comes to your old car? WDIY's vehicle donation program will turn your ride into your favorite programs on Lehigh Valley Public Radio. The towing is free, all the paperwork is taken care of, and your gift is tax deductible. For more information, call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit wdiy.org.
This is WDIY 88.1 Public Radio, and you are tuned in to Lehigh Valley Arts Salon. I'm your host, Kate Scuffle, and I've been talking with Touchstone Theater's Executive Director, J.P. Jordan, about America Dreams, Touchstone Theater's newest interactive theatrical adventure, set in an aging Dust Bowl-era carnival with the power to transport people inside of America's dreams. Running Saturday, April 18th and Sunday, April 19th at 2 p.m. at the Bethlehem Rose Garden. And before we go, we'll mention there are rain dates, just in case. But before we went to the break, we were talking a little bit about how one holds these conversations in a theatrical way. So there's exhibits. I'm coming to this carnival and I'm encountering attractions and exhibits. Could you talk a little bit about this, JP? What do they look like? How do they...
Yeah, for sure. So let's jump to the one about our past. How do we reconcile our past? And so what we've done for this, the way we approach this is you go to the Mystics tent. And in the Mystics tent, there's a tarot reading going on. And you notice that there's a schism between the assistant and the mystic. And so The only way we can know to clearly is to hold a seance and to reach out and be visited by the spirits of the past.
Okay.
And so this is set up a la the 1920s Houdini-esque era sort of seance parlor that the audience will go into. Then we have how do we deal with our future? We've set this up as a World's Fair exhibit, an inventor's showcase, where an inventor has created a machine that that all we need to do is invest in the machine and invest in the machine. And eventually our children and our children's children will never have to know the ache of a broken back. Then we have this idea of commodification and commercialization. And this is, for those familiar with the Rose Garden and the Macadam walking paths, along the northernmost walking path over there, there will be dioramas set up for places around the country, and these cars that the audiences will walk around in, like, their own costume car, and they will go on the Great American Road Trip where everything's available at the gift shop, and we see the parodies of these different locations throughout our country.
Yeah.
We then go to our arcade, which is a la the Midway Pier of the 40s, where audiences are separated into smaller groups, and they have to play games against each other and then punish each other when their team wins. And so we have to find a way out. How do we move beyond this idea of like teams and collectivism? And then there's the Pecosville puppet extravaganza, where we walk through this idea of American mythology and understand how these things can be so meaningful, but yet so skewed and deluding in the way we receive them.
That's so interesting. I'm curious, when I'm imagining this, barkers and seances and whatever, how did you cast? How did you work with? Because I know these are always community integrated projects. And I know behind the scenes, there's always a lot of community involvement. But on, quote unquote, on stage, on the grass, how did that come together?
So, with the ensemble creating it, the most, you know, about half of the Get Touched on ensemble you'll rarely see on stage. Like from myself or Christopher Shore or Lisa Jordan, like we're directing and doing things behind the scenes often. But some of the people involved in the writing, like they wrote the characters for themselves when we were writing these scenes. And so you'll see Bill George playing Pecos Bill, and you'll see Matt Perdo playing the inventor, and Mary playing the mystic. And then our apprentices who are in the room with us get to play some of those other roles in it. And then what we did for this one is we realized that we have such a rich resource in the teaching artists that work for Touchstone, and we really wanted to engage them in the roles. So we got as many of them involved as we could. Then on the next level, with like having such a history of doing community-based work, and most recently part of the Festival Unbound initiative when we did Allison Information Land.
Yes.
Up at Lehigh University, like we've got a huge call list at this point of people who have performed, and like, and we love performing, having performed with us. And then so we reach out to them and say, hey, how can we get this out to the greater community? And then, that keeps building. The cast of this show alone is over, I think, between 30 and 35 people.
Wow.
That doesn't include the amount of stage management people that are on board for this, and the different designers and the people building and putting the thing together. It's upwards of 50 people, like, for this production. And it's like, whenever you're dealing with one of these large scale kind of community initiatives like this, it's like steel bound or something. You're talking about like 50 to 100 people like that are getting involved in those shows. And it's so it's like not only are you engaging audience when you do the show, but like a whole time along the way, you're building community. The whole performative act of creating performance as a group is so community building.
And transformative. That's interesting to me, too. You're changing the community just by the fact of involving the community this way. Yeah. Yeah. Before we go, I do want to let people, you know rain dates, things like that. But I'm curious, were there any challenges or surprises along the way? I mean, because you are asking people to share their dreams or their opinions, their thoughts, listen to each other. Maybe there'll be surprises along the way with the performance. But at this point, I don't know.
I think when you get out of that initial phase of just like with the people in the room and coming to terms and learning how to work together at the best you can. And like, you know, there's always, you know, any MBA course will tell you there's like a steps in forming a high functioning group. And you know what I mean? And so that's where the struggle comes in. Like at the beginning of these things, it was like with the artistic body of figuring those things out. But then it just, I'm a firm believer, and we teach it to our MFA students, but it's just like 5% inspiration, 95% perspiration. It is such a cliche, but it is so true. Like, yeah. It's like, here's the seed of this thing. Here, like, now all we have to do is write a script. And now all we have to do is do the design. You know what right. I mean? And it's like, and so it's like, but it's just like all of that. It's the work, and it's a work after nearly, you know, we're 45 years old.
Doing
like Touchstone has the institutional memory of doing this type of work, luckily, like deep ingrained.
In the DNA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so not so many surprises, you know what I mean? The surprises come, it's just like, okay, now what are we going to do if we have to pivot to the rain date and stuff like that? And just being prepared for those kind of things. But we have a really strong team within the ensemble. Like, I think some of the best artists I've worked with are currently in the ensemble.
Okay.
You know, bringing Matt on, who is a graduate of the MFA program. Matt is such a thorough artistic thinker. And Christopher, I've worked with as kind of one of my main, you know, partners for now over 15 years. And then you see somebody like Mary Wright, who it's just like, oh, Mary's the lady in Follies, right? That's Little Red. It's like Mary Wright is a powerhouse. Like, creatively, she is just next level. She's constantly coming in with ideas that I'm just like, oh man, cool. I did not think of that. And it's just like, and so I love working with Mary. And then, and that's not to say there's everybody else. There's Sam Beadle, there's Lisa Jordan, there's Bill George, and then there's Amber Sheree. There's our Jolie and Anissa, you know what I mean, type of thing. Like, it's a room full of very creative people, and it's just like, it's invigorating to go to work and be surrounded with such creative potential.
At the end of the weekend, I mean, at the end of this experience, which is going to be incredibly rich and intense and all of that, and all of the 2 years and the planning and the talking, what do you hope the audience leaves with?
I think for me that I hope that people can just leave here with the understanding that, like, it's okay that there are many different views of things. And we need to live with that, because that's what it's about. It's about our freedom to have whatever ideology we want. We're not free to burn down the house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Type of thing. We're not free to hurt each other.
Yeah.
But we are free to believe what we want to believe. And we're free to have discourse about that. And, like, how, if anything, can we just constantly hold our truths in our heart along with everybody else's truth? And it doesn't have to change your truth, but knowing that things can simultaneously exist.
Mm. It's interesting, too, I think, the takes on what the American dream is, or what it means to people, or what it's meant over the 250 years and how it's changed, can all be held as well.
Yeah,
the story of who we are and who we'll be.
Yeah, can you carry this in your heart? You know, the well-being of the people, like, right, your neighbors, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How can you receive them and, like, just love them? I guess is the word, not to get too cheesy about it.
Yeah,
but, like,
yeah.
How can you have the openness and love and compassion in your heart to just, like, be like, cool, I don't think the same as you. Like, we don't need to be at war about that.
Right.
You know, our war will be the ballot box. And that's as far as it needs to go. I'll cast my vote. You'll cast yours. And then at the end of the day, like, we're all Americans.
It's a big tent.
It's the big tent.
And that's the whole point. For our listeners, just to know, a reminder that America Dreams does run April 18th to April 19th, starting at 2 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday at the Rose Garden in North Bethlehem. The rain date, which it won't rain, but just in case, would be the next weekend. That would be April 25th and 26th at 3:30 p.m. if it is the rain weekend. Obviously, lots of info available online at touchstone.org. Tickets are pay what you will, which is lovely. Guests are advised to wear comfortable shoes and dress appropriately for the weather and, I suppose, for the event. Chairs will be provided for those that need them, but just know that several sections of the show involve standing, moving from location to location, traveling together. Last thoughts, JP, before we close out. I mean, this is really, it's interesting that it began 2 years ago, and I think feels probably only more, not only timely, but needed now.
I think
it's
we've
exciting
been
li- to
maybe,
receive, you
maybe
know?
But I think we've been living in interesting times for quite a period.
Yes, that can be said. And so thank you, and thanks to Touchstone for reminding us too at moments like this of the power of the arts to sidestep that split, that kind of war of words and thoughts and dreams, and be the big tent as well. So thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners for joining us again. I've been your host, Kate Scuffle, and I look forward to visiting with you again soon, right here in the Lehigh Valley Arts Salon on WDIY 88.1 FM, the Lehigh Valley's public radio. Lehigh Valley Arts Salon is supported by the Dexter F. and Dorothy H. Baker Foundation, who believes lives are enriched through a vibrant and enduring arts community, and invites you to join them in supporting the arts.